Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and today's show is going to be very interesting. We have two guests and myself, and so we're going to see where the conversation goes. But I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show, especially today, because we're going to have a little bit more time to dive deep into what's going on in the world and the life of our guests. So while you're going ahead and introducing the show to your friends, I'm going to go ahead and introduce a dear friend of mine who's always providing me with assistance, always being a guest, always giving me her feedback, suggestion, and support, Ms. Allison Allman. Allison Allman is known as the organization maven. She helps busy, disorganized people in Southern California by organizing their homes, offices, and lives. She has been organizing for 20 years. Her method of dealing with root causes and purging excess items has transformed her clients' lives. Good morning, Allison. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm so excited. It's Tuesday morning.
You just switched that around because first that dance was the it's Monday morning dance. Now we had to move it a little bit.
It's Tuesday, and so your show isn't cool unless I come on it and announce that it's cool now.
I received that. I thank you. I'll go ahead and take it. You are pretty cool. So tell us about yourself, Allison. Who are you and what do you do?
So I'm so excited to be me.
I'm sorry. Did you just say you are so excited to be you? And they think I'm bad. They say I'm bad. You should be some of my friends. Did she just say that? Go ahead. I'm sorry. I interrupted.
It's so exciting because there's so much transformation going on. I have my hand in quite a few different projects right now, and there's just so much excitement and change happening. I too like variety every day. I like something different. So that's one of the reasons why I like helping so many people and doing so many different projects during the same month. But so I'm a home organizer. I help people organize and just deal with clutter. There's so many different levels of clutter. I don't call it hoarding. That's something that like Hollywood has given it. There's just different levels of clutter and how people's brains work and how they process it all. I think that's really the best way to describe it. And there's just it's just a challenge every day. I wake up in the morning and I'm so excited to tackle another challenge. And at some point I get tired or fatigued. And so then I eat something and then I jump back into the game of organizing and finishing the project and then, you know, leaving everyone happy and feeling happy and excited. So I mean, that's why I do it. I mean, it's probably pretty selfish that I like that feeling of accomplishing stuff every day. And so my house is done. It's been done since 7:15. So I'm like, oh, let's go help someone else.
No, I mean, I like it. I relate because I always say I do the show for selfish reasons. You know, part of those reasons is the ability to learn from other people and what they do. But I want to go back to what you said about you don't call it hoarding. Hollywood calls it hoarding. I think that's very nice and sweet and generous. And that's the kind of person you are. But there are people who are hoarders. I'm sure there are homes where you walk into and be like, oh, my God, why? I can give you an example of a hoarder. My ex-husband, when I went in his house for the first time, he had a closet that had nothing but yellow pages. It was a closet full of yellow pages. So I'm like, dude, we got to get rid of these yellow pages. He's like, no, I'm keeping them. Like, why are you keeping all these yellow pages? He was like, because the people just get rid of them and they don't realize that the information doesn't change that much. I'm like, that's proving my point, right? Like, if it doesn't change that much, then why not just keep the most recent one and let the other ones go? But see, to me, that's hoarding.
So I had a client most recently that did a very similar thing. And he was able to tell me that some of the data in the older ones is still accurate. And he really liked to see the kind of the businesses that went out of business. And so when you got the updated one, if they weren't in the yellow pages, then that meant they went under. So then he would like try to investigate what happened to them and did like a whole lot of time finding out like the story. And it just turned out they just didn't advertise to pay to have a in it. So, but it was like a 2-a-day experience that I found that all out. But so there's, well, I mean, so if you go online and Google hoarding, there's 5 levels of hoarding, which I didn't ever know until I found that out a couple months ago. But there's all these different things. But here's the issue. It's all a root cause. Something happened in their childhood of how they grew up. Maybe they grew up during the Depression, or they grew up with abandonment issues, or they grew up with all these other root causes. And so the best way that I have been able to work with hoarders successfully is addressing their root problem and letting them know that there's 2 factors involved. There's usually a reason why I'm hired, like they're moving, they're downsizing, they're something. So that I have to appease their feelings and assure them that their stuff is still safe and that it's going to a good home. That's a huge phrase, that they want to make sure their stuff's going to a good home and not the trash and not to a Goodwill Salvation Army type place, because they don't feel their item will be loved in transition. Like the employees of Salvation Army just will knock around their stuff and not treasure it, so to speak. So then I have to do a little bit more legwork and find a shelter or find a rightful owner for their new item. There's just so much more involved. I mean, I don't want to steal the whole hour talking about hoarders, but I mean, it's a very complex subject. It's not something, but I do feel at the same time that hoarders, the actual word, is a Hollywood coined word versus people that just have issues with clutter and how they process it. I truly feel it's more along those lines. So.
No, I agree. I agree with everything that you had to say, even your idea, your belief that it's more of a Hollywood, you know, after the show Hoarders came out, there were people who were like, oh yeah, I know her. She's a hoarder. Everybody's a hoarder. It just becomes common the more we see it. We were discussing the word, what's the word? I can't even think of the word. It'll come back to me. Narcissistic, you know, like all of a sudden everybody keeps tossing this word out and it's like, okay, yeah, but yeah. What is the clinical definition? So very interesting, Allison. Of course, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Mason Harris. Mason is award-winning business owner, entrepreneur, public speaker, and author. His new book, The Chutzpah Advantage, Go Bigger, Be Bolder, Do Better, be out by March 2021. Mason Harris, a DC area native transplanted from New York City, is the middle child of Eastern European immigrants. And he's going to share his story with us today. Good morning, Mason. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing today, Sharitha? And also, Allison, a pleasure to meet you.
I'm excited to have you here. You're one of the people who do it the right way. And when I say the right way is you don't wait until your book has been out for 2 years to decide, I want to talk about my book, you know? So let's talk about what you have going on, Mason.
There's a count that I've been thinking about my book for over 2 years, and it took me a while to actually sit down and write it. That's a delaying tactic that I think many of us do. And actually, Allison, it's interesting that you brought up the Hollywood version and the hoarders. There's actually a section in my book related to one of the 8 behaviors of chutzpah that I identify that refers to that show, not in a positive way, but as one thing to avoid, the ability or inability to make decisions, the ambiguity that surrounds, do I throw this out? Do I keep this? Do I want the yellow pages from who knows how many years back? Because maybe I'm going to need that plumber sometime down the road. So, but thank you for having me. It's interesting. Are both of you familiar with the word chutzpah?
Yes, I love that word.
Good, okay. How would you define it?
Somebody who just has guts, like they just, I mean, the word that comes to mind, I'm trying to be politically correct, but like they have balls, they're ballsy. They just, you know, when everybody else stops, or most importantly, I think, and this is a long-winded answer, when most people are afraid to speak up or to speak out, they usually are the voice of the people.
Mm-hmm. And actually the words you used, and it's not politically incorrect. I did a presentation to the AMA, American Management Association in DC several years ago. And I asked the question and a woman in the front just yelled out ballsy. Mm-hmm. And she brought the house down. And it just goes to show that chutzpah isn't about gender. It's not about race, color, economic level. It's about an attitude and a skill set that we can all put to use to go bigger, be bolder, and do better, which is the subtitle of the book. Allison, do you have a sense or a definition as well
for chutzpah? Well, I hadn't heard the word until you asked us. So I was glad that Sharifa answered, because I was like, I don't know what that is. I have to Google it. But I do feel in lots of ways I've been very ballsy over the years of just being me. Short little story. I was working as a receptionist somewhere, and the suite right next to us had fired the receptionist and they needed a receptionist. So I left my employment and I went next door and said, can I be your receptionist? And the office manager goes, but you're the office manager next door. And I go, I hate my job and he's not giving me insurance. And I just want to sit at a desk and be a receptionist. Like, I don't want to be an office manager anymore. So she said, sure, fill out an application. I'll give it to the owner. The owner hired me. And everyone thought it was just shocking that I left and went right next door. And it was brought up that you must be, the office manager later told me, you're really ballsy to go and do that. And I go, oh, well, you guys offer insurance and I just wanted to sit. So it just seemed like a win-win. I wasn't like, you know, I didn't even think about what I was doing as being brave or anything, but it was really the best moment was I had given my 2-week notice to the original place and then he fired me. And then 2 days later, I pull into my same parking space in the parking lot and he comes running out of the suite and says, Allison, I fired you a couple of days ago. And I go, I know. I said, good morning. I know. And then I walked right past him into the next door suite and waved to him as I walked in the door. And then my new desk faced the window through to my old desk that he now was pulling his hair out, looking for files, all kinds of stuff. And that was that moment of just shock on his face when I'm like, I know, good morning. I don't care what you're doing.
That's pretty ballsy. I say you have chutzpah.
Sometimes the lack of appreciation or rejection actually becomes the motivation for making changes in our lives. So it's interesting, Allison, you hit on easily 3 of the 8 behaviors that I describe in chutzpah with that one simple story. So my model is an acronym using the letters of the word chutzpah, so that these behaviors, these characteristics are easy to learn and implement, but chances are we're doing them at some level right away. So the first behavior, I just went next door and I said, I'm interested in the job, even though at the time you were employed, you wanted to, in essence, make yourself happier, solve a need, provide a solution to your lack of, even though you may have had a higher level position in some people's minds at the original job, you are now moving to something that would give you more opportunity and personal satisfaction. So if we look at the acronym, the C in the word chutzpah stands for carpe diem, which is seize the moment. In your case, you learned of an opportunity. You didn't hesitate. Maybe you had some thoughts. Maybe you checked with family members and some people said, good idea. And others may have said, oh no, I wouldn't do that. It's not as good a job. But you seize the moment and you move forward. Where so many of us are stuck is that we don't move forward. We have ideas. We know we're not satisfied. We see opportunities for success, but we're a bit hesitant. So the carpe diem is the first of these behaviors, and it's one of the underlying behaviors for people's chutzpah.
I must have chutzpah going through my blood.
you're the maven on keeping places clean and organized. So you've got some of this Yiddish already in there. So now you've got a second word you can throw around to clients.
Yes, but I mean, okay. I like when you say it, Mason, it sounds so sweet. It sounds so pretty, the carpe diem and all that. But usually, just like Allison, when I make moves like that, the world goes, Sharifa. You can't just do that. Exactly.
Okay. This is a perfect lead-in. We didn't rehearse this. That is now the second of the, in the acronym, the first H, it's chutzpah, C-H-U-T-Z-P-A-H. And actually, for those people who are watching on Facebook now or participating in a way. Certainly, please provide comments when we're done. But if you'd like, take a sheet of paper and a pen and draw a circle. And then cut that circle into 8 slices like a pizza. And then if you write each of the letters of chutzpah in there, at the end of this show, you may have a model with all of these behaviors, these characteristics. So the first one we said was carpe diem. Now, carpe diem, by the way, both of you do it. I can tell that just from my research and even the way you speak, your stories. You don't hesitate to seize the day. Now, some people say, oh, carpe diem, yeah, I'm always changing what I think. For example, we just had a New Year's, January 1st. People decide that, hey, I am starting a new diet, as an example. So there's chutzpah can lead to personal success. It can lead to business success. You can also create a culture of chutzpah within an organization. But for those people who, as an example, say, that's it, January 1st, this is the year I'm dropping 15 pounds. Well, by January 4th, they're starting to get a little tempted by the cheesecake that their partner is eating. And by January 7th, they've tasted it. And by January 11th, it's all over. But then they'll start up again, maybe in March. So carpe diem, seizing the day, is not doing it over and over, but failing to go all the way through, to fulfill the obligation, to giving up too easily. Carpe diem is seizing and then continuing along with it, which is what both of you have done. Now you mentioned, Sharifa, the objections that you got from people, right? It's like, why are you doing this? Why are you going either into politics, or why are you starting this Facebook live broadcast? You know how difficult that is? You know how long it'll take you to achieve your objectives doing this? The second one, that H, stands for handling objections. So again, if you're doing that pizza model, you now have carpe diem and H, handling objections. Every good idea that we have, even all the bad ones, people will object to. And objections can be very healthy. I'm sure, Allison, when you're helping clients, you're getting objections back. You have to know how to handle those objections, because you have a bigger view. You have a larger sense of the picture and the results that will occur. Right. So there are techniques you have, probably answers you formulated over your years of working with clients, that come into play when you get these objections. Sharifa, what are some of the biggest objections you can remember, professionally or personally?
Thank you. Excellent question, Mason. I am enjoying this show immensely. I always talk about when I built my first website in 1994. My family told me, not everyone, because I have to clarify now, because the family makes sure I clarify, but not everyone, but there were people who said, you are lazy. Because in 1994, the mindset was that if you did not leave your house, if you were an employee, then you were lazy. That's just how people were, because we still worked through our might, you know, through our physique, as opposed to our mind. And absolutely no one really worked from home. So those were the objections. But I'm gonna let you finish. I want to go back and take it to 2021. My biggest struggle in 2021 is not the people who object by saying you're lazy or you're crazy. It's the people who just go, Sharifa, I know you're going to do it anyway. And then there's absolutely no objections. Like, that's where I am now. I'm like, nobody's going to say stop. Nobody's going to say, Sharifa, did you think this through? And they're like, no, because we know you're going to do it anyway.
Yep. I know you are going to do it anyway, too. I know that about you.
It wouldn't surprise me if you still get objections, even if they're good. Sometimes the objections help us fine tune an idea. You also just actually hit on another one of the behaviors when you spoke about people objected with the idea that, hey, you don't work from home. If you work, you have a job, you leave the house. Mm-hmm. The T in the chutzpah acronym, and we're moving now further around this pizza wheel, or however you want to look at it, stands for trailblaze.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Amen. Preach.
Are trailblazers. And what does it mean to be a trailblazer? It means that you don't mind the criticism. You don't mind the other people, the derision of like, oh, that's such a bad idea. It'll never work. You don't mind actually even making mistakes. You're willing to risk failure to move forward.
Yeah, I was told many times, fail fast, fail often. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so real quick before we move on too far with the carpe seize the day. So I, the essential oil blend that I put on my diffuser before I started the show is called Seize the Day. And it's my morning blend that gets me going every day. But I replenish the oils with the recipe. And I thought, wow, this is like right on spot here.
We're seizing the day. That's the message, the vibe, the energy of today's show. So if you're just now tuning in, make sure you share the show so your friends can go ahead and seize the day. Back to you, Mason. I always wanted to do that. Back to you, Mason, in the studio.
And I think having somebody actually say that to me live on Facebook for the first time in my life. Back to you, Mason. I enjoy it. So my book, The Chutzpah Advantage, which will be out April 1st on Amazon. Outlines not only these eight behaviors, but also identifies six types of chutzpah. People who are following the show right now are probably saying, well, I've heard that chutzpah is bad. Well, other people say, oh, chutzpah, that's Elon Musk. That's Steve Jobs. I can't reach that level of success. Or why would I want to do something that is rude or inconsiderate, which is the other side? Well, as I see it, chutzpah is a skill set. And as in many skill sets, you can learn something and then choose to use it for constructive purposes or destructive purposes. When I was interviewing for the people for my book, I spoke with somebody who gave me a great example. He said, somebody who goes in good at math and wants to learn computer programming can become an expert on the computer side, write apps, algorithms, software programs, and then use that for good. Maybe it's related to healthcare. Maybe it's related to corporate efficiency. Maybe it's an accounting app that we can all use. That's one element, but they can also use it to create ransomware, to steal people's behavior. The skill set is the same, being proficient at programming. It's how somebody chooses to use it. So there can be a flip side to chutzpah just as there's a flip side to anything in life. But from our standpoint, all I can do is share the behaviors and hope that we move forward with it in a positive way. And when I speak about there are six different types of chutzpah, it ranges from the good to the bad. It ranges from, I mentioned, for example, Elon Musk, who for me is the epitome of chutzpah on steroids, one of my categories. He has the chutzpah and the level of success keeps going. It keeps increasing. There's a good deal of a good fortune, but strategy and also the willingness to fail that's related to that. The type of chutzpah that the three of us have is on the constructive side, and it's what I call win-win chutzpah. The idea that, Sharifa, you are providing this format to educate and entertain people. They're going to learn and be exposed to new ideas. You win and they win. Allison, the same with you. Your clients win because they end up with a less cluttered life, not a less cluttered house. That's one of the side benefits, but their lives become less cluttered because of the value that they get in coming home and saying, wow, this really is better. There are probably other areas within their lives, their psyche, that could use a little uncluttering, and Allison has set them on that path already.
Yep.
No, that's what we were talking about with the hoarding earlier, because I agree with Allison as far as the root cause, because I always talk about, you know, in my childhood growing up, it was my responsibility to dust all of my mother's little tchotchkes, you know, as they like to call them. But she had eight brothers and sisters, so it was nine of them growing up. And so she never had enough. So as an adult, she always wanted to have enough. And for me in my life, it was way too much. So now if you come to my house as an adult, there's absolutely nothing. Everybody's like, where's your stuff? I don't like stuff. I don't do stuff. I'm anti-stuff. But that was just part of...
I can attest, I've been in her house. It looks like she just moved in. Like there's nothing on the walls. There's not really any furniture. Like, I think that was one of the first things I said is, did you just move in here? And she's like, no, I've lived here for like 10 years. And I'm like, you have? Because... it doesn't look like a home. Like it doesn't have those home touches. And so this is totally true. Yeah. I have lots of home touches. So But at the same time, everything is tidy, and it takes me like all of like 8 minutes to tidy up my apartment. Having a small apartment helps too. I will confess to this. Living in 300 square feet, it's really hard to have a lot of stuff. But at the same time, my neighbors have the same 300 square feet, and I have way more floor space than them. So it's just how you use it and work it. Yeah. Mason's eyes are saucers. I could see him. He's like 300 square feet. What?
I grew up in New York, and granted, 300 square feet, you could raise a family of six. But still, that's pretty small. So yeah. It's important that you make sure it's uncluttered. Otherwise, things can spiral out of control.
Yeah, yes. It definitely does. I'd have to say, like when I'm working on something that's bothering me in my house, like right now, my kitchen cabinets are bothering me. So I've been doing different reels and making it prettier, I guess, or just buying things that make me smile. But so I've been improving my improvement. And so then, I'm glad that social media exists. So now I can share it. But before, I'd just be like, you know, before social media, I think I would just call someone and tell someone. Now it's like, oh, let's make a reel. Let's add some pretty music to it. Oh, okay, let's put it here. Now everyone can see my pretty backsplash pink. I did shelf paper, but instead of putting it on the shelf, I put it on the back part of the cabinet. So it looks really good. So I did that last night after I got in from a long, long day.
We have to check it out. We have to find out. I want to go back to Mason real quick and talk about, you're talking about the chutzpah. But usually even, you know, because my dad's from New York, so it's certain terms that I'm kind of used to.
Can tell you right away, he was born there. He's had a chutzpah.
Yes, but there was always one lady on the block in New York. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you always knew that was the lady who had the chutzpah. That was the one. For you, was there a lady that you just kind of knew she had? Somebody that stood out in the neighborhood, like, oh, Mrs. whatever her name was.
Well, you know, I can't say that the lady up the block who used to yell at me to stop playing stickball near her house had a chutzpah. But like all of us growing up, I had my childhood heroes. Mm-hmm. One of them, and I am a long-suffering New York Mets fan, by the way, but one of them was Jackie Robinson, mm-hmm. the baseball player that broke the color barrier. Now, I wasn't even where he was playing. I was born after he started and just before he retired. But you learn about certain people. And although his story always resonated with me, I never realized how closely it follows the chutzpah model. Mm-hmm. So we spoke about the carpe diem. Here you have, and this is in the late 1940s. And even though Jackie Robinson had served in the army for this country, it was in a unit that was segregated. And he came back to Brooklyn, to New York, where segregation and across the country was the norm. And he was a phenomenal athlete playing baseball in the Negro Leagues. And there are a number of players who were as good as Jackie, as I should say Mr. Robinson, because I didn't know him personally, but as good as Jackie Robinson, who might have been able to make the transition to Major League Baseball as well. But Branch Rickey, who owned the Dodgers, after meeting with a number of players, felt that Jackie had the temperament. There was something different, which I see as chutzpah, to make the switch. So how does that fit? Obviously, the carpe diem. He had to make the decision to leave the safety and security of being a star in the Negro Leagues and playing now in stadiums across the country, where he would be subject to racist remarks, hatred, sleeping in different hotels. It's a picture of America at that time, which isn't good. And he had the ability, the intestinal fortitude, the strength, the willpower to make this switch. Handling objections, oh, I'm sure there were objections from family, from teammates, from people in his church saying, are you sure you want to do this? Do you want to put yourself in a position where you're going to be hearing these remarks? Even your teammates may not want you on the team. And I'm being generous when I say may not want you on the team.
Right.
So he had to handle those objectives. He certainly was a trailblazer, which is one of the ones we spoke about. One of the other key elements of chutzpah, and this goes to the P now, for those of you who are still keeping track and writing in your pizza slices. P stands for purpose. Hmm. When you have purpose, you can get through a lot. When you have purpose, you're willing to say, I can deal with A, because I know that in the long run, B, is, which is what I'm after, is way more important than the pain, the insults, or whatever it is. And my chapter in the book on purpose, I'm not going to get into now, goes into, is probably it was the toughest chapter for me to write. And when people see the book, they'll understand it. But purpose is critical. Jackie Robinson had a purpose. His purpose was to say, hey, I want to be treated equally. I'm as good as the next player. I don't care what color you are. I deserve to be on the same stage as the next guy. And I will do well there. If anything, I'm going to do better because you don't think I'm going to do well. We spoke earlier about what motivates us. Like Allison, when you spoke about leaving that job. Yeah, that you were able to tell your boss, hey, across from the window, how you doing? I'm doing well here and I'm happy. There's a motivation there. So the purpose there was part of it. There's another in the
before we go too far, I want to go back to, you mentioned and you kind of slipped it in there, so I want to go back to it. Why was this the most difficult chapter for you to write?
Yeah, I want to know that too.
Okay. A lot of the chapters have humor in it. Mm-hmm. They're all filled with stories that that I hope will resonate with the reader. But I tell the stories so I get a sense for the audience. I think they will. That chapter, what I call purpose, is called Man's Search for Meaning, or Purpose, Man's Search for Meaning, and then there's a number. Are you familiar with the book, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl?
I've heard of it. Yes, I have not. I'm not familiar with it, but I have heard it.
Viktor Frankl is a psychiatrist who is also a survivor, or was, he's passed away since, of the concentration camp called Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. And as a survivor, and a psychiatrist, he started getting a sense for his fellow prisoners and who had the best probability of survival if certain things didn't happen. So he starts with this, which we all know. And I'll ask this a lot as well. We all know that luck is out there. We want to believe that our success is based exclusively on hard work, but there is luck too. Lots of people have luck, but don't know how to take advantage of it. And by the way, good luck and bad luck come into play for all of us. Okay, so what Viktor Frankl said was that if you had the misfortune, the bad luck, to be chosen, selected by a guard for the gas chamber, it was over. It didn't make a difference how strong you were emotionally, how much you wanted to survive, it was over because bad luck came into play. But if you didn't have that bad luck, and you were given the opportunity to work in these horrendous conditions, seeing people basically beaten, starved, shot, fall down at work, and then dragged off to the gas chambers, if you could emotionally get through that, you had a chance to live. And what helped get people through that terrible part? It was their purpose. He found that if people had a purpose that went beyond the camp, beyond the war, if they were able to say, I can deal with this, they can throw at me whatever they want. But I don't want to say his words directly, I'm paraphrasing here, but I choose how I'm going to respond to the treatment that I'm getting. In his case, he and his wife were taken to the camp together, and their purpose, they promised they would survive the camps and meet after the war. That's what drove them every day to be able to take whatever it was he was subjected to, because he had to reunite with his wife. His wife, unfortunately, was murdered in the camp. But after the war, after liberation, he wrote this book, which is I'd recommend it. It's one of, I think, the best books of all time, and it's made several of those lists. It's a very difficult book to read, but when you get a sense of purpose, and here this is the ultimate in terms of what gets you through something bad, purpose was critical. We all face daily turmoil, and I'm going to go back to a different level now, and we think, how am I going to get by this family issue? How am I going to get by this boss? What can I do? What should I change to increase my probability of success? If there's a purpose beyond it, and it can be a big purpose or multiple little purposes that change over time, we have a much better chance of succeeding. Again, it gets back to, I can choose how I respond to events and people. I can't choose how they treat me.
And but that would mean that it would seem to me that that would be like your favorite chapter. Like, I just want to write this chapter to give these people this information so maybe they can find a purpose and their lives will improve. But for you, you say it was the hardest. Did it force you to be more raw, more open, more authentic to look at what your definition or your belief systems are?
Yeah. It is one of my favorite chapters. It's a very different chapter. I said it's very hard to write, and you can see that it gets into an extremely serious topic. When people mistreat people all the time, people are subject to violence and racism, hatred because of a different religion all the time. Here we were talking about death camps that were built specifically for a purpose. So why was it so hard to write? I start with the story of a family from a little village in Czechoslovakia called Serenia. And I follow this family from the beginning of the war or pre-war. And it's only a couple pages, so it's not a lot about the family. The mother, the father, the daughters, the brothers, what's going on? Then when the Hungarian army moves in 1941, war starts in 39 for them. Hungarian army moves in 41 and things get worse for the Jews. They take away the businesses, the opportunity to work. 44 in January, the Nazis moved in. Well, by April, they were on their way, transported by train to a ghetto in Hungary. And 6-7 weeks later, they were on the cattle car trains on their way to Auschwitz. Well, that family is my mom's family.
Oh,
wow.
I understand.
Uh-huh. So that's where, but I share it because I think it's a lesson in regard to chutzpah. Now people survived because they were both lucky and because they had the chutzpah to basically say, look, do what you want with me. I'm going to do everything I can to get back to my family, to get back to my village, to start a new life elsewhere. So that's where purpose is so important.
Wow, I want the book now.
Thank you.
I think that's the first time I've said it to the guest, and I've been a guest, I don't know, 42 times or something like that.
We'll certainly connect and we'll make you aware when it's coming out. But it's, again, due April 1st. But most of the book, actually, I've had the two editors that went through it. Both of them said, this guy is funny. Mm-hmm. So I'm pleased about that because I want the book to be valuable, provide takeaways to people, but also be entertaining enough to continue reading.
Right, I mean, what keeps it going.
I start the book with a classic joke, one of the oldest jokes I've ever learned, which now you'll say, well, what's the joke?
I'll wait for the book. I'll wait for the book.
Okay, we're good.
No, but you seem funny. Just, I mean, I almost said you're funny looking, but that's not what I meant. But just looking at you, you remind me of Steve Martin. Like, that's the vibe that I get. Just, I mean, and he often did comedy as a straight man, just like, and you, like, you have to kind of like it, what, you know, but when you recognize Steve Martin and all of his work, you get the humor in it. So I kind of see the same aspect.
Well, I thank you. Steve Martin's a very, very funny guy. Talk about one of the classics. I happen to think he's good looking. I never really thought of myself that way. Well, I guess one difference, he has a lot nicer homes than I do. I have clutter in my home. He has a professional, like Allison, calling him in case he needs to know.
I like celebrities when I organize for them. They have some really cool stuff and a lot of stuff they don't need.
Are they like, what's his name, OJ? When OJ, if I could have talked to OJ about all of his memorabilia, I'd have been like, just let it go, OJ. Just let it go. You know, do they try to hold on to all of this stuff from all of these years that sometimes they just need to let go of?
Right into that.
Yes, no, that was a question, Allison.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, in general, just a lot of people hold on to stuff. I run into the most people I run into are the just in case people that, they never make chocolate souffles, but they have 8 ramekins just in case they're going to have a dinner party and they're going to make their own chocolate souffles. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing I run into. So usually my number one answer is, great, let's have a dinner party this weekend. Let's use up all these cool dishes. Let's integrate it. You know, why don't you start making chocolate souffles yourself? And, it's like, so my biggest thing is I kind of call them out on their someday and be like, let's be someday now. Like the other thing I've run into is people that got married 10 and 20 years ago, they still have their wedding presents in their garage and they've never opened up the serving plate or the champagne flutes or the whatever. And I go, hey, let's integrate it into your kitchen now. Here, let's open the box. Let's integrate it. Oh, no, this is for special occasions. So you haven't had a special occasion in the past 20 years. You haven't had an anniversary. You haven't had a promotion at your job. You haven't had a baby born. Like, those are all special occasions. Oh, well, we have other champagne floats for that. And I go, so what you're telling me is you don't need this, but you want to keep it just in case, right? And they go, well, yeah. Okay, let's use it now. No, I'm not going to use it. Great, let's donate it.
I don't know, actually, between both of you, what's the proper etiquette if you haven't written your thank you card for 20 years because you've been waiting to use it? Do you finally get around to saying, hey, we finally unpacked those champagne foods? And I'll tell you, they were a little dusty, but we really appreciate your having stopped by at the wedding.
Well, no. It's usually once I call them out on it and they realize that they haven't used it and yet they've had all these special occasions or whatnot, then I can totally see the wheels turning. They're like, you're right, I haven't used this. I've had many special occasions, but I never ran out to my garage and went into the rafters and said, oh, I'm going to use these champagne flutes. So, I give them the option to re-gift it to another wedding couple, which I'm really sorry if anyone received any gifts that were 20 years old. But even at that, they're like, oh no, I'm just going to buy off the wedding registry. I'm like, right. You're not going to use these. You're not going to gift these. So what does that mean we do with it? Oh, we put it in your truck and we donate it. I go, right. You got my job. This is what we do. And so that's and there's some things that they really insist on keeping and that they're not going to use. And so then I kind of negotiate with them on other things. I kind of pick my battles. You know, I a classic example of this is a client that were high school sweethearts in high school in the 80s. He used to make mixtapes, cassette tapes, mixtapes for his girlfriend. And then I came across those in this one closet. And then like the very next box was all these 90s CD bands and from the 90s. And so I said, okay, you have a choice. Keep the mixtapes that you made and everything, or keep the CDs. It's one or the other. Which one has more sentimental value, not financial value? And they go, oh, the mixtapes, hand down. I go, great, let's get rid of these CDs. And then they're like, oh, well, I might listen to them. And I go, oh, you mean over here in the closet that you never go into, this bedroom that's way back here, and you don't have Apple Music or iTunes, or you don't have a Sirius XM in your car? Like, when are you going to listen to these CDs way over here in the closet that you're insisting on keeping? Well, I have teenage daughters. I'll see if they're interested. I go, in 90s bands, unless it's Nirvana or Foo Fighters or Pearl Jam, your teen is not going to know who half these bands are. I know, because I was in the 90s and I was alive for all that. So they go, oh, no, my teen is going to want this. So I like grab the box. I go downstairs to the kitchen where the teens are doing homework at the kitchen table. And I'm like, here's some CDs. Enjoy. Looked at it and go, who are these bands? And I just start laughing and walk back up the stairs. I go, your teens have no idea who these bands are. Please, let's get rid of these. It's just taking up space. You're not using it. You know, I gave all the justification. Well, I want to keep it just in case. I go, in case of what? That you no longer have iTunes anymore? That you no longer have Spotify? You no longer have, you know, Amazon Music with your Amazon account? Like, what is just in case? When is just in case?
The apocalypse might come one day, Allison.
As far as I know, they still have the CDs. They're now divorced, so I don't know who got the CDs in the divorce, but I don't know where the mixtapes are either. I haven't ever asked. I don't know if they divided that in half or just threw those away.
It almost sounds like, Allison, you would recommend that I throw out all my 8-track tapes by now, that there's not going to be much value any longer on them.
Here's my issue. If you listen to your 8-tracks every single day, like you wake up in the morning, so I have an Alexa, and every morning I have a good morning routine. I don't even say it. She just automatically turns on music at a certain time. Tells me the weather, all kinds of stuff. It's a great thing. So if I had an 8-track player and 8 tracks, I would set it up so that every morning at 7:03, the 8-track played said thing, and I would enjoy them. That's my biggest thing, is please enjoy your stuff. Whatever you don't enjoy and use, please get rid of, because you need the space. So
there are probably also a number of you that would love to get a donation of 8-track to show what America looked like in a different century. So
yes. So we're down to probably the last 14 minutes of the show. So I want to get in the last few letters for our listeners, our audience, who are actually writing down the circle.
Oh, okay. Let's see. We've gone through carpe diem. We looked at handling objections, and we had good illustrations from both of you on that. The U is about what I call the trifecta of solutions. So what do I mean here? People with chutzpah solve problems. So U is uncovering need, pain, or opportunity. So there's a difference between need and pain. I might say, you know, I really need a new car, because this one's looking ragged, and you know, it doesn't even have Bluetooth. I can't get my podcast. I can't listen to Sharif while I'm driving to work easily. I've got to have a bad speaker. So right away, that has turned that need into pain, because now they do need better technology. But pain occurs when that car is breaking down and people are getting to work late and are at risk of losing their job. So you identify need because people do want to solve needs, but they don't have quite the urgency. Pain needs resolution quickly, because if it isn't resolved, more dramatic things may happen. And then opportunity is what the entrepreneur with chutzpah finds. And a good example, if we go back, let's say 5-6 years, we probably would have felt that there are enough transportation solutions. There are taxi cabs. There are cabs you could call on the phone. There are public buses. There are trains. We can get around. And of course, we can drive. And here, this company Uber comes along and is pitching their idea, which was bigger than just ride sharing, but that we're going to create a convenience. We're going to enlarge the market. Well, while they were doing this, one of the big VC firms looked at their model and hired a well-known professor, economist, to look at their plan and say, are they ever going to achieve these valuations that they're speaking about? We want to know what you think. Well, the economist, the professor, is a great example of listen to what the experts say and then do the opposite. Because he came back with a response that was, I can't see this growing the way they see it. The entire market is X billion. if they even get 50% market share, and this is the key, 50% market share of the total market today, they're only going to be a $1 billion company. The problem was he wasn't thinking in terms of an expanded market. He wasn't thinking in terms of people that, yeah, we know we have options and we have a car, but what Uber or Lyft or the other ride sharing apps give me the opportunity to do is leave my car at home, go out and have drinks when previously I couldn't drink if I knew that I was going to be driving. So that's what the U stands for. The T we mentioned is trailblazing. People with chutzpah are
trailblazers. They were also trailblazers, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's what I tend to do. But the other aspect of just the U and Uber was they also allow people to have income. They allow people to create jobs and go out and be drivers when they, you know, had weekends off or spare times and an opportunity they wouldn't have had prior to Uber. Created this
Could they get a taxi license and do the insurance and everything was just so much, it wouldn't be appealing to like a stay-at-home mom that has open time from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. or something like that.
Yeah, and you would have to have a set schedule, you know, at most jobs, whereas Uber, if you have a couple hours, maybe the kids are going camping for the weekend with dad and I'm sitting at home, I could just turn on the Uber app and drive.
Right. And that's those are great points, because we think in terms of opportunity. When I say the entrepreneur, the business person thinks, OK, I know what the need is. I know what the pain is. Is there something that we're missing, something we can do that's so different that really we talk about disrupting an industry? That was an example of disruption. Let's provide this service. And then the other opportunity there was, yes, employment for people who had a block of time and could suddenly generate income. So that's a great point over there.
Yeah.
Okay. The T we mentioned trailblazing, the willingness to take risks, even if we fail, because somebody with chutzpah knows that failure is just learning to do something differently. I may have failed this first time, the second time, this third time, but I know not to do it that way again, because there's going to be a different opportunity. Z is what I call zigzag. It's a different version of handling objections. So when you handle objections, say in a sales call or people trying to persuade you to go one way versus another, don't start your talk show or don't start a business for people who need help uncluttering because there isn't that much a need. Both of you have shown those doubters that they were wrong. But what if you need a bank loan? Or what if you're an author, for example, and you think you have a great idea for a book, and the first publisher says, nah, we're not interested. Well, it's easy to get discouraged and say, oh, they're probably right, this thing. As an author, I know I go through a lot of, this really won't be good enough. It's not going to impact people. Why am I wasting my time? But there was an author who was rejected 12 times on the book.
Harry Potter.
All right, Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling, and she's not the only one. There are a number of authors who share similar stories. Rejection, 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 rejection. And then the interesting thing about J.K. Rowling, she brought it to a publishing company, and the person that looked at it said, you know, these aren't the types of books we do. Let me give it to my daughter to read, okay? 2 days later, the daughter's back and says, this is the best thing I've ever read. When is the next one coming out? When can I read the rest of it? But basically, it's like, this has captured my imagination. I absolutely love this. So they ended up moving forward. But it's not the end of the story, because the publisher said, look, Joanne Rowling, we can't use an author named Joanne who's writing about a boy wizard and appeal to all these teenage boys because they're not going to buy a book by a female. Okay, talk about, again, blindsided. So that's why they went with J.K. Okay, they went with the initials so as to not potentially turn off part of the market. Right. So the zigzag says, I don't care what obstacle you throw in my way. If there's a way for me to go to the left of it, to the right of it, over it, under it, I'm going to continue going. I'm going to persevere. I'm determined. I have grit. You're not going to set me back. Again, it gets back to the purpose. You can't control what people say or do, but you can control your reaction. You can decide for yourself, well, this is my next step. That's what chutzpah is about. Okay, so that's the zigzag. The A I mentioned gets back to ambiguity. And Allison, what you teach people to do is to eliminate the ambiguity about all those items that they've collected and they don't know what to get rid of. And you do it by asking a series of collections. You have CDs, you have mixtapes. Okay, which is the one that's more important to you? Well, if they have ambiguity, you're saying, well, emotionally, I'm really attached to the mixtapes because they reflected my feelings at the time I made them. Okay, then because you can always access through one of the music services, the same music that's on the CDs, and this is cluttering your house, this is taking up space that will benefit you for other things that you truly do need to use, wouldn't it be easier to get rid of that right now? Donate it, sell it, whatever. So by asking the questions, by eliminating some of this ambiguity, you give them a solution. Well, yes. People with chutzpah have to go through this. Jeff Bezos, another person with chutzpah on steroids, in speaking about decisions, said that he looks at decision-making as a two-way door, or one-way or two-way door. In a two-way door, you can make those decisions quickly, because if it's the wrong decision, you turn around, you go right back through the door, you implement another one. You don't spend months researching, trying to make the decision. You move. It gets back to carpe diem. Make a decision and move forward. A one-way door, obviously, if the door shuts behind you and you've invested a good deal of the company's resources going in one strategy, you better make sure that's a good decision. But you still have to make it, because if you're going to allow the decision to be made for you, you may miss the market, you may miss the opportunity.
You may miss the boat.
Right. The decision gets made for you without your input, because you decide, oh, you know, I can't do it. I won't move forward on that.
Yes. Go ahead, Mason, because I want you to give the last one and your takeaway from the show, because we are down to like the last 2 minutes.
You got it. Then we'll make this quick because I want you to finish up. The last H in chutzpah is about humility. Humility, somebody with chutzpah, usually they're not humble people. Actually, that's wrong. Jim Collins, in his fantastic business book, Good to Great, talks about qualities of leaders. And every day we see it. People who are successful with humility, people who credit those around them for their success, create better, more motivated teams and cultures. They have more friends. The person who is successful and takes all the credit for himself or herself, they're not as, it makes it more difficult to be successful the next time. Sooner or later, it comes back to you. Yes. So that's your model at the moment.
I love the model, Mason. What would you like people to take away from your appearance here today? Are you doing pre-orders? Can they go to the website?
My website, which is thechutzpahguy.com, speaks more about my, or speaks to my public speaking appearances. The book, the Amazon page is not yet up. We will start taking pre-orders before the end of this month, with delivery April 1st as the start date. But as far as the takeaway, I've discussed 8 principles, 8 behaviors. If people listening just say to themselves, I tell you what, I found 4 or 5 of those that apply to me. But if you only start with one, if you make the promise to yourself today, I'm going to work on, and maybe it's handling objections. Instead of when the first objection comes back, I shrink back into a shell and I abandon my ideas. Don't do that. Handle the objections. And there are techniques in the book that discuss that as an example. But the idea is pick one of the 8 and decide, this is what I'm going to focus on today. And obviously, if people want to reach out to me, I'm available at mason@thechutzpahguy.com.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mason. Allison, what final words, what takeaway would you like to leave our audience with today?
I had a great show time today, and it was exciting. It was really, really exciting. Mason should come back to your show again.
Yes, come back.
my subtlety of being the co-host of our show.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy helping people. I want to continue. continue to help people. Anyone watching live or on the replay is welcome to go to AllisonAllman.com or Google search the organization Maven. I have several different outlets to choose from to connect with me. I love challenges. I don't label my clients. I don't judge them. I just come in with a new perspective and just try to work my magic at their home. So no one can feel like, oh man, she's going to talk about me on the show, or oh man, she's going to be run screaming and then, you know, never come back. That's never, I mean, the few times I add stories to the show is just kind of impromptu, but I don't use any names or anything like that. But yeah, I enjoy challenges and I don't give any judgment. People's brains are just wired differently than mine. I just see clutter different. And that's why I get hired to come in and tackle the problem. So I just look forward to the next show and meeting more people.
I look forward to having you back on the Roundtable Talk Show. I want to thank you both for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support. We appreciate you tuning in. We appreciate you watching the show. But always, as always, I just ask that you support our guests, especially this morning. Mason has provided us with so much information, so much detailed information that can actually change your life, and Allison is always here to provide you with information that can change your home. And that's more than just fixing a little boxes, is making your life better. So support our guests, visit their websites, reach out to them, send them a message, and when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until next time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.